Okay, good morning. Today's daf is Bava Kama daf Nun Hey. We left off the bottom of Nun Dalin Amud Beis, two lines up from the bottom of the Amud. Today's shir is going to focus on primarily three things, I guess. So the first thing, yesterday we saw the distinction between what's written in the first set of Dibros and what's written in the second set of Dibros, vis-a-vis the concept of Shvisa on Shabbos. And then in the second set of Dibros it says Sharcha v'chamarcha, and in the first set of Dibros it said Bemtecha, and the second set it said V'chol Bemtecha. We learned out all the various limudim that we learned from there, and specifically from the discrepancy in language between the first set of Dibros and the second set of Dibros. So today we're going to start the shir with another discrepancy between the first set of Dibros and the second set of Dibros, which is going to bear on something that some would call the anti-Dafyomi coincidence, because it refers to something that happened on Shivasar Batamas, which we observed yesterday. So it won't come up for basically another year, but we'll see more distinctions between the first Dibros and the second set of Dibros. The Perek is going to conclude with a discussion of Kalayim, and if there is, and if there could be Kalayim for working with two different species of wild geese. If there's Kalayim, are there Kalayim in various forms of fowl? And then the Perek is going to conclude with the discussion of, let's say you have a person who decides that he's going to pull a boat down the river by harnessing a goat on the land, and then harnessing a fish in the sea. So if he has a fish and a goat pulling together, is that going to be considered Kalayim or not? We know usually you're not allowed to pull something or work two animals of a different species, and that applies even to sea creatures. But the question is, are you allowed to pull with one sea creature and one animal who's actually walking on dry land and which generally exists on dry land? Is that considered to be Kalayim? So the Perek is going to conclude with that. Then we're going to start the sixth Perek today on the top of Amud Beis. And the sixth parak is going to talk about the type of shmira, the type of damage, and the things that you're pater and chaya for if you are watching tzon. So we had been discussing for a very long time what happens niske shor. Then we had a digression, which we'll explain why we had that digression. We'll see a tosfos why we started then discussing niske bar. And now we're back to Nizke Tzon. Now we're back to discussing other animals, the type of damage that the Tzon can do, the type of liability that an owner bears if his Tzon does certain damage. So we'll see all that, God willing, in the beginning of the sixth Perek. Says the Gemara. So we left off again, Daf Nun Dalan Amud Beis, two lines up from the bottom, so we'll pick off from there. So Shaul Rabbi Chanina ben Ogil es Rabbi Chia bar Abba. So Rabbi Chanina ben Ogil es Rabbi Chia bar Abba, b'nei ma b'divros rishonos l'namar b'em tov, u'b'divros ha'achronos namar b'em tov. Why is it that by the divros rishonos it is not, the word tov is not mentioned, and by the Dibros Achronos, the word tov is mentioned? Says Rashi, what tov are we talking about? We're talking about Gabi Kibud Ava'im, Dechsiv Behem Laman Yitav Lach. It says by Kibud Ava'im, the phrase Laman Yitav. So how come by Kibud Ava'im, by the mitzvah of Kibud Ava'im, by the second set of Dibros, it says Laman Yitav, by the first set of Dibros, it does not say Laman Yitav? So he says a somewhat startling response. So Ad Sha'ata Sho'alni Lama Nemar Bem Tov. So you're asking me a question. So again, this was Rav Chanina ben Ogil asking Rav Chia bar Abba. So Rav Chia bar Abba is a well-known Amora. He appears very often in the Gemara. So Rav Chia bar Abba says like this. Before you start asking me Lama Nemar Bem Tov, why it says Tov by the second set of Dibros and not by the first set of Dibros, Sha'alni Im Nemar Bem Tov, you should ask me if it says Tov by the second set of Dibros as opposed to the first set of Dibros Imlav. She'eni Yodea Nemar Bem Tov Imlav, because I don't know whether it says Tov or not. So he says, Klachek Tzal Rab Tamcha Marchani Loi Shaya Rogalei Tzal Rab Yishua Ben Levi Shaya Baki Ba'agadata. So you have to go to Rav Tamcha Mar Chaniloi, who was a Talmud of Rabbi Shua ben Levi, who was a Baki in Agada. So you have to ask him why there's a distinction between the verbiage in the second set of Dibros as opposed to the first set of Dibros, and why it says Tov in the second set of Dibros and it does not say Tov, but it does not say Lamanitav in the first set of Dibros. The Rishonim ask, how is it possible that Rabbi Chia bar Abba, who was an Amora, who should have known everything, was not an expert in what it actually said in Chumash, especially if you recall not if you recall, but if you bear in mind that back then in the times of the Tanaim and the Amorim, we're talking about people who knew all of Tanakh Baal Peh. So how's it possible that an Amora didn't know what was written in the Aseres HaDibros, which is, you know, not that one part of Torah is more important than the other part of Torah, but there are critical passages in the Torah which people tend to commit to memory, and you would think that the Aseres HaDibros is one of them. So how could it be that he didn't know whether Tov was written in the Aseres HaDibros or not? So the Ein Yaakov explains that Reb Chiya bar Abba certainly knew what was written in the Torah. All right, he certainly knew that when the Aseres HaDibros were written in the Torah, then the first time it didn't say Tov, the second time it did say Tov. What Rabbi Chiya bar Abba was answering was that he didn't know what was written on the Luchos. In other words, that we don't know whether what's written in the Torah is an actual transcription of what was written on the Luchos, or whether it was something else. And so what he was saying was, if you're going to ask why certain of the Dibros said something and others of the Dibros didn't say anything, then we just don't know what was written on the Luchos. I know it was written in the Torah. I know that in the Torah, the second set of Dibros says Lamanitav, the first set doesn't. But the question is, what did the actual Luchos say? And that I don't know. So The Beis Aharon explains totally different. He says that the kasha is not on why in the second set of Luchos it says Laman Yitav, and in the first set it doesn't say Laman Yitav. He says the actual question that was posed was, why by the second set of Luchos does it say Tov, not the actual word Tov, but why are there 17 letters, if you count up the letters in the second set of Dibros, and then compare them with the first set of Dibros, you'll find that the second set of Dibros, as written in the Torah, contains 17 more letters than the first set of Dibros. And so the kasha was, why does it contain more letters in the second set than it does in the first set? And the amount of letters that it contains that's greater than in the first set is the gematria of Tov. It's 17. So that's a little easier to understand, right? That the Amora didn't know necessarily that the second set of Dibros contains 17 more letters, or why the second set of Dibros contains 17 more letters. But certainly what it said in the second set of Dibros in the Torah as opposed to the first set, certainly the Amoraim would have known. But in any event, he says, look, I'm not a Baki. Go to Rav Tamchan Bar Chanilo, who was always learning Bar Yeshua ben Levi, who was a Baki Biagada. So Azal Gabei. So he went to him, Amarlei Mimenu Lo Shamati, I didn't hear from Rabbi Shua ben Levi, Elakach Amarlei Shmuel Bar Nachum, Achi Imo Shal Rabbi Acha Rabbi Chanina, but so said Shmuel Bar Nachum, the uncle of Rabbi Chanina, of Amrila Avi Imo Shal Rabbi Chanina, others say the grandfather of Rabbi Achi Rabbi Chanina, Hol V'sofan Leishtaber, since ultimately the second Luchos are going to be broken. So here's our anti-Daf Yomi coincidence. One of the things that we commemorate on Shavuos or Batamas is the breaking of the Luchos. Here the morning after Shavuos or Batamas observed, on Yotes Tamas we have this reference to the fact that the Luchos were broken. So says the Gemara, so v'chisofan l'shtaber mai hava. Okay, so the first set of Luchos were going to be broken. That's why it doesn't say Tov. But, well, I mean, that's your explanation. But so what? So the first set of Luchos were going to be broken. Why is that a reason to not say Tov in the set of Luchos? So says the Gemara, Amar Ravi Ashi, chas v'sholom piska Tova mi Yisrael. Because symbolically, if there's a set of Luchos that says the word Tov, and that set of Luchos is broken, chas v'chalila, you might think that Tov, that the concept of goodness is lost from Klal Yisrael. And to avoid the impression that the concept of goodness is going to be lost from Klal Yisrael, the word Tov, or the words Lamanitav, were not written in the first set of Dibros, which were destined to be broken. The Maharal explains that Tov is something that when you describe something as good, you describe a long-standing, sustainable relationship as something that is good, something that is fitting. Like a husband is a good match for his wife because it's supposed to be a long-standing, sustainable relationship. The marriage between Klal Yisrael and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, as evidenced through the Torah, is supposed to be a long-standing and sustainable relationship. Now, when Klal Yisrael received the first Dibros, they were still in an angelic state, and they had not yet sinned at all. They were on a very, very, very high level of spirituality that they had attained after Yetzias Mitzrayim, that they reached right by the time of Matan Torah. But it was a level that was incapable of being sustained. What happened? They then sinned with the Cheta Egel, but they did tshuva. They ultimately got themselves back to a level where, as human beings who are fallible, yet who are capable of doing tshuva and bringing themselves back to the level where they were worthy of experiencing that connection with the Torah, where they finally got to the second set of Dibros in Parshas Va'eschanan. And so when it says Lamanitav, when it says the word Tov, when we describe this long-standing relationship between Klal Yisrael and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, what we're really doing is we're calling to mind that relationship that exists between HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and through his Torah, he's able to have a relationship with the human beings who are fallible human beings. We're not perfect, we're not malachim, but that's why we have the Torah. So says the Maharal, that's the symbolism here. We didn't want to suggest that the concept of Tov, that the concept of a connection between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Klal Yisrael through Torah is ever inappropriate or unsustainable, because it is sustainable, it's everlasting. What was not sustainable was that connection that was predicated on Klal Yisrael reaching his status of Malachim, because that's an artificial status for Klal Yisrael to have reached. That's why it's not written in the first set of Dibros. Where it is written is in the second set of Dibros, where we forge a connection as human beings, as Basar Vadam, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu through the Torah. That's where the word Tov is mentioned. So says the Maharal. Okay, so says the... So says the Gemara Vayter, so Amar Rav Yeshua, so says Rav Yeshua, since we're talking about the word Tov, Haroa Tes B'chalomo Simen Yafalo, if a person sees the letter Tes in a dream, it's a good Simen, my Taima. So what's the reason that it's a Simen Yafa? In Lema Mishem Dechsev Tov, if it's because Tes is the first letter in the word Tov, so Ema V'tatasea B'matatoi Hashmeid. So the word Tes, is the letter Tes is also the first letter in the word Tatasea, b'metatoi hashmei. There are a lot of tesses in this phrase, and what it means is that Hashem is going to sweep us clear with the broom of destruction. So that's obviously not such a good omen if you see the word tess. So says the Gemara, chates kamrina. Okay, but look at these words. These words are like tongue twisters. Tatasea has two tesses. Bimetatoi has two tesses. So maybe if you see two tesses in a dream, it's a bad symbol. But if you see one tess in a dream, then maybe it's a good omen. But Ema Tumasa Bishuleo, so another sort of Dafyomi coincidence, because these psukim are quoted from Megillas Eicha. We now begun the 3 weeks. So it says in the Megillas Eicha, Tumasa Bishuleo, when discussing Yerushalayim in its state of destruction, so Tes Beis Kamrinan. I mean, if you see Tes Beis, so okay. So it doesn't mean Tatasea, because that's two tests, and it doesn't mean Tumasa Bishuleo, because Tumasa Bishuleo doesn't have a Beis afterwards. So if you see a Tes Beis, which are basically all of the letters in the word Tov, then it's a good omen. Says the Gemara, no, I'm not satisfied. Ema Tavu Ba'aretz Sharel, also from Megillas Eicha, again discussing or describing the state of Yerushalayim in its destruction, where it says Tavu, which is Tes Beis. So maybe Tes Beis, even if you see it, is not a good symbol. Maybe the reason is that the Gemara retracts, not because of any symbolism with the word, but because the first time that the letter Tes is mentioned in the entire Torah, Shemibreshes Advayar Lekimis Sa'ar, where the next word is Kitov, Loksiv Tes, there's not any instance of the letter Tes appearing, then that's why if you see a Tes in a dream, it's going to be a good omen. It's not only because the letter Tes happens to be the letter with which the word Tov begins, or even if you see a Tes Beis, it's most of the letters in the word Tov. It's because if you see the letter Tes, the first instance in the Torah of the letter Tes being written is when it says Tov. So Vamar Rav Yeshua ben Levi, says Rav Yeshua ben Levi, just again, sort of a tangent, because we've already discussed the good omen of seeing the word Tes, of seeing the letter Tes. From Rav Yeshua ben Levi, Aroa Hesped b'chalomo, if you see the word Hesped in your dream, Chasu alav min Shamayim, then he should know that they were Chas on him, they had Rachmanos on him from Shamayim, Upta'u, and they redeemed him, and basically in lieu of him experiencing his own Hesped, he's now seeing the word Hesped, Bahani Bili b'chsava. Says the Gemara, that's only if you see it in writing. If you see an actual Hesped being delivered for you in your dream, not such a good omen. If you see the word hesped written in a dream, then that's a good omen because it shows that you were supposed to have something bad befall you, but instead, you're just seeing this in your dream, and that should be a kapara. The Maral explains, as we know, that back in the days of the Gemara, the words hey and ches were used interchangeably, and so instead of hesped, it was an allusion to the fact that chas paid. So if you divide it into two words, so the first part of the word becomes not hes, not has, but the word chas. So that's a symbol that's a symbol to the fact that that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was chas on him by showing this in a dream as opposed to actually carrying it out. Okay, so v'chein chaya va'of v'chayotzevem. So we saw yesterday a list of 8 halachos that apply not only to a shor and a chamar but also to other behemos, chayos and ofos. Why did the Pasuk write these halachas lagabe shor and chamar? Because dibra kosa behove. Because the Pasuk speaks about the types of animals that were prevalent, that were typically kept around, which are shor and chamar. Okay. So says the Gemara, Amrei Shlakesh, Kanshana Rebbe, here's where Rebbe learned that Tarnagol, a chicken, Tavas, a peacock, Upisune, and a partridge, Kalayim Zebazeh, they're all Kalayim with one another, and that you're not allowed to mate them with one another. So says the Gemara Pshita, it's Pashat, you told me that the Isra of Kalayim applies not only to Shor and Chamar, but also to all animals, including Chayas and Ofa. So of course, it applies to Ofa, so it'll apply to all these different types of birds. What's the Chiddush? So I'm Rev Chaviva, Mishum, Derabu, Bahadi Adadi, because they live among one another, Ma'odetema Min Chadu, I might think that therefore they're one min, and they are not separate minim. Kamash Mulan, that they are separate minim, and therefore it is an Isra of Kalayim if you mate them one with the other. Says the Gemara Vayter, Amar Shmuel, Avaz, a goose, Va'avaz Abor, and a wild goose, Kalayim Zebazeh, they are Kalayim with one another. So Maskefla Rava Barbara Chanan, my taima, why are they Kalayim with one another? Ilim Mishem Dehai Orech Kuei Vahai Zutur Kuei, if it's because this one has a long beak and the other one has a short beak. Selamayata, so Gamla Parsa, Vagamla Taya, if so, then you should say that a Persian camel and an Arabian camel, the high olim kue, the high cotton kue, where one has a thick neck and one has a thin neck, hachanami davi kalayim zebazeh, are you going to say that they're also kalayim with one another? No, because they're both types of camels. Even though they might have different physical characteristics, they're both camels, and therefore there is no kalayim. So this goose and the wild goose, even though it might have physical characteristics in terms of the length of its beak, that shouldn't cause it to be kalayim. Selam rabaya. No, because they have more fundamental differences. Zeh beitzav mibichutz v'zeh beitzav mibifnim. One of them carries its eggs outside, and one of them carries its eggs inside. Rav Papa Amar, in terms of the gestation, Hatu nechada biyasa b'shichla. Another distinction is that one of them carries only one egg per gestation period. Vaituna kama biyasa b'shichla. And the other carries multiple eggs in a gestation, in every gestation. And so basically what the Gemara is saying is that this is not merely a minor physical difference. This is a major physiological difference. And that's why it's considered to be kalayim if you mate the goose and the wild goose together. So it says the Gemara, Amrav Yirmiya, Amrei Shlakesh, Amravia Shnei Minim Shebeyam Loke. If a person mates two different minim, two different sea creatures, then he's going to get Malkus. My taima, what's the reason? Some Ravada Brahava Mishmeidu Ula, because says Ravada Brahava Mishmeidu Ula Asya Leminehu. Leminehu Miabasha. So it's a Xerishava Leminehu to the Yabasha, to what it says by dry land. So boy Rechava says Es Rachva the following question. Hamanig beiza bishibuta. If a person draws a carriage, he draws a wagon with a goat. So on dry land, let's say he's drawing it. He's riding the wagon. Is on a riverbank, and so he's got one rein attached to a goat, which is on dry land, and the other rein is saddled around a shibuta fish, which was a very large fish. The Rishonim point out that it's a fish that was called Iza Shabiyam, because it was such a workhorse, it was called the goat of the sea. So if a person draws a wagon with the force of an Iza and a Shibuta combined. So Mahu, so what's the halacha? So mi amrin on kiven the Iza lo nachas bayam v'shibuta lo salak li abasha lav klum avid. Do you say that it's no problem? Because what are you doing? You're mating. The whole problem of working two animals together is an issue of mating them, and the A's, the goat, will never go into the sea. The Shibuta will never go onto dry land, so they're not really capable of mating with one another anyway. So maybe both, you know, using them both at the same time to work and to pull a wagon, maybe that's not such a big deal. Odilma hashlamia kamanig, or maybe no, you are working them together, and therefore it is a problem of kalayim. So maskef la Ravina, so frekt Ravina, ilamayata. If so, then if you take a stalk of wheat and a kernel of barley and a stalk of barley biyado v'zora chita b'eretz v'zora b'chutz laretz, and you plant the chita in Eretz Yisrael and the so'ora in chutz laretz, hachinami demechayev, would you then say that you're chayev if you're going to impose liability on me for being maneg a wagon with both the A's and the shibuta fish at the same time? Then you should impose liability on me for simply carrying wheat and barley in my hand, even though I'm planting one in Eretz Yisrael and one in Chutz La'aretz. So the Gemara says it's the same thing. And of course, you're going to be potter for doing that if you plant one in Eretz Yisrael and one in Chutz La'aretz. So says the Gemara, Hachanami. Amri Hachi Hashta. Well, you think that's a valid comparison? Hasam Eretz Makam Chiyuva, Chutz La'aretz Lamakam Chiyuva, Hacha Idiv Idi Chiyuva Hu. However, so says the Gemara, there's no comparison. In a chanami, when I carry a chita and a saora in my hand, and I put them down, one in Eretz Yisrael, one in Chutz La'aretz, of course I'm not going to be chayiv. But the reason that I'm not going to be chayiv is because Chutz La'aretz, there's no iser in kalayim at all. There's only an iser of kalayim in Eretz Yisrael. However, over here, where I'm pulling the wagon with one animal that lives on dry land and the other animal that lives in the sea, even though they're generally not next to each other and they're generally not interchangeable with one another because they can't switch positions, there is at least an iser kalayim that applies in both places. If I took two animals that are on dry land and I mix them, then there would be an iser kalayim. If I took two sea creatures and I mated them, or if I worked them together, then there would be an iser kalayim. So over here, I'm dealing with two makomos of chiyuv. By the case where I have the two things in my hand and I'm planting one in Eretz Yisrael and one in Chutz La'aretz, there's only one makom chiyuv. The other makom is a makom ptur. Therefore, it's not going to be considered the same thing. So the Gemara at the end of the day says we cannot bring a raya from the case where the guy holds one kernel of chita, one kernel of sora in his hand, and plants one in Eretz Yisrael and one Chutz La'aretz. We don't have any raya from there. The Rosh says because we don't have a raya either way, we don't conclude conclusively either way, therefore we should paskin the chumra. So if you were thinking about pulling a wagon with an animal and a fish, don't do it. So Hadron Allah, Shor Shanaga Chasapara, so now we begin the sixth parak. So Hakone Son Ladir. If a guy brings a tzon into a pen, he brings a sheep into a pen. So first, so even before we begin, so we should see this Tosfos, Hakone Son Ladir. So says Tosfos, Zehar Yerei Lishanos La'el, Bahade Mili Deshor. Really, this Mishnah should have been written earlier in the previous parak when we were discussing all the halachos of Ashor, Delohayla Lahafzik, Bemili Debar. Because really, there was a huge tangent the past couple of blots when we were talking about the halacha of what happens with liability regarding a pit. So why were we talking about a bar? Ela Agav Detani Nafal Labar, Vehivish Memav. Well, in the context of discussing Mili Deshor, we had spoken about the shor that falls into the bar and contaminates the water in the pit. Satana Basrei Mila Debar. So therefore, the Gemara picks up on that and then focuses on things relevant to a pit. Inami Mila Debar Roy Lishanas Tchila Kotem Shishna Dine Shmira. Or maybe the Mila Debar should be written first before we talk about all the halachos of Shmira. Vegam Dine Eishaya Roy Lishanas Tchila. And also, we should have technically spoken about Eish also before we talk about the Dine Shmira, because in other words, first we should talk about the various, the Arba Avos Nezikin, And after we get done talking about the Arba Avos Nezikin, then we should talk about what one must do in order to guard those Avos Nezikin from actually causing damage. Ela agav detran ki seyu karoi bebar dotsur klaskir din poseach v'kore shabo dibar akosov tananami hach dinol befanel karoi. Okay, so then Tosva says, so why now am I talking about Son? Why don't we first talk about Eish after talking about Bar? So he says, because one of the halachas that we learn by Bar is if you find the Bar open and you cover it properly, that we learned a couple of days ago. So Agav, that the Gemara talks about covering a Bar properly, we're talking about guarding Son and what one must do in order to guard Son properly. So says Tosva, that's why this Mishnah is found here in the beginning of this parak. So Akonet Son Ladir. If you bring tzon into a pen, v'nol b'fanel karoi, and you lock the door properly, v'yotza v'ezeka, nevertheless, it goes out and it's mazik. So, potter, you're going to be potter. Why? Because you did everything that you could have done. You were null the deles b'fanel, you were null the deles in front of the tzon karoi. Now, Nila Karoi, Rashi points out, is that it's able to be omed even from a Ruach Metsuya, that it's going to withstand the strength even of a fairly common gust of wind. Lo Nol Befanel Karoi, if you did not lock the gate in front of it properly, V'yatza, and then the Tzon exits the pen, V'ezika, and it causes damage, then Chayev, then you're going to be Chayev for the damage because you didn't behave properly, you didn't lock the gate appropriately. Nifritza Belaila, if the tzon breached or if the gate was breached at night, Osha Pertua Listim, or if Listim breached the gate, the Yatza Vezeka Potter, and they went out, and the tzon went out and caused damage, then it's going to be Potter. And Tosfos points out of here a chiddush, Vitzurich Lashmina Dafilu Alistim Pterim Kishalo Hotzio, that not only is the owner Potter because the breach in the fence was caused by bandits and he should not have known that the fence was breached, but even the bandits are going to be Potter for the associated damage that is caused by the tzon. Why? Because the bandits didn't remove the tzon from the pen. So even though the bandits caused the breach, they didn't actually physically remove the tzon. Therefore, Tosfos has a chiddush, they're going to be Potter as well. Now, Hotzia Listim, if the Listim remove the tzon, then Listim Chayavin. Then the Listim are going to be Chayav, because then the Listim did physically bring the tzon out of the pen. Some say that's only where the Listim actually made a Kinyan Meshicha, because if the Listim didn't make a Kinyan Meshicha, then the fact that they brought them out is meaningless. There was no mechanism to transfer the responsibility and the ownership of the tzon to the listim. But if the listim stam breached the fence, they're not going to be chayev for damage, although the owner also will not be chayev. If the listim brought the tzon out, then the listim will be chayev. Hinicha b'chama, if you put the tzon in the direct sunlight, and in the direct sunlight they get very agitated, and therefore once they get very agitated, an ne'ilah karoi, says Rashi, is not going to be sufficient to guard them, because you're going to need a much stronger method of guarding them once they get all agitated and all hyped up. Osha masro l'cheira shota v'katan, or if you had to go somewhere to run an errand, so you said to a mentally incompetent person, go watch my tzon, v'yatza v'zeka, and then surprise, the tzon left the pen and did damage, chayev, then you're going to be chayev. Because you acted negligently in guarding the tzon, or in failing to guard the tzon by giving them over to an incompetent person to watch. Masra l'roa, if you give them to a shepherd, nichnas haroa tachtav, then the shepherd fills your shoes in basically being chayev to watch them. So if you give them to a mentally competent shepherd, then the shepherd's going to step in and take your place. Nufla legina, if the tzon fell from the pen into somebody's garden, venenis, and they have hana from what's planted in the gina, then mishalemes mashanenis, then they have to pay for what they had hana for. Yorda kedarka vezika, if however, we're not talking about a case where they fell ba'onis, we're talking about a case where the animal consciously left the pen and went into somebody else's garden and did damage, mishalemes masha ezika. Then he has to pay for the amount of damage, not for the amount of ana, rather for the amount of damage, because you only pay for the amount of ana when the tzon found itself there ba'ones. However, when the tzon consciously went into the garden, then it has to pay for the damage. Now, how do you calculate the damage? So ketzad mishalemes masha ezika. How do you calculate the damage? So shaman beisa'a bosa'a. So the Tanakhama says, well, what we're talking about is as follows. We're talking about a case where the tzon ate, let's say, one row of crops. Now, instead of measuring the value of that one row of crops, which is going to be worth quite a bit of money, what we do is we take a base saw of the property, we take a base saw of the garden, and we say, how much is this base saw worth with that row of crops, and how much is it worth without that row of crops? That difference is the damage that you caused. Now, that difference is going to be much smaller than damaging the row of crops itself. This concept we saw also a couple of days ago. It's so as to not unduly penalize the mazik. That's why if there are two ways of calculating damages, one of which would result in a much higher valuation than the other, we'll use the one that will result in the lower valuation. However, Rav Shimon argues, Rav Shimon Omer, Achla peiros gemurim, mishalemes peiros gemurim, imsasa, Im satayim. If he ate one saw, then you pay for one saw. If he ate two saw, then you pay for two saw. So in other words, Rabbi Shimon says that the halacha that the Tanakhama brings down in the Mishnah, his method of calculating damages, of saying that you value a larger tract of the field and how much that tract is worth with and without the damage row, that's only when the peiros were not ripe. If the peiros were not ripe, then yes, that's the way you calculate the damages. However, if the peiros were ripe, then you actually value the fruit. You value what the tzon ate, and you have to compensate the owner for what the tzon ate. So says the Gemara, Satana Rabbanan. So you're making a distinction between a nol b'fanei karoy and shalo karoy, but I don't know what any of that means. Satana Rabbanan, eza karoy v'eza shalo karoy. What's karoy, what's shalo karoy? So dela sheyichol alama baruach mitzuya ze karoy. So a deles which is able to withstand even a ruach mitzuya, that's considered to be karoy. And she'ina yachol alama baruach mitzuya ze shalo karoy. And if it's not able to withstand even a typical wind, even a typical breeze, that's considered to be ain't a karoy. So Amar Amoni Bar Potish, so Mantana Mua Desagile Bishmira Pchusa. So over here, again, you'll remember from a couple of this is a couple of weeks ago already, we had said that if you guard something with something that's able to withstand a ruach mitsuya, but not a ruach she'ena mitsuya, not an uncommonly strong wind, that's called a shmira pchusa. That's called a lesser amount of shmira. If you guard something in a manner where it's capable of withstanding even a ruach she'ena mitsuya, that's called a shmira meula. What we see over here is that even a shmira pchusa, even just the shmira that's capable of withstanding the regular wind, but not more, that's enough to guard the tzon. So who says that a muad, and a tzon is always going to be a muad, lagabe eating stuff. So who says that a muad is good enough by shmira pchusa? Rabbi Yudi, it's Rabbi Yudi, the Tanan, kashru bala b'moseira. If the owner ties a leather rein around the muad, v'nol lefanav karoy, or if he locks the gate in front of the muad properly, meaning that it's able to withstand the ruach mitsuya, but not a ruach sheina mitsuya, v'yatzah v'hezik, and it then goes out, echatam v'echad muad chayiv, whether it's a tam or a muad, you're going to be chayiv, divrei Rav Meir, because Rav Meir says that by a muad, it's not enough to do a shmira p'chusa. Rav Yudah amar tam chayiv muad pata. Rav Yudah, however, says that if it's a short tam, then you're going to be chayiv. If it's a muad, then you're going to be pata. Shenemar v'lo yishmerenu ba'alav v'shamarhu, because the pasuk says that you're chayiv by a muad only if v'lo yishmerenu ba'alav. But over here, he did watch the animal, and therefore even a shmira p'chusa is good by muad. Rabbi Lezer Omer, Rabbi Lezer, and we also saw this shita a couple of weeks ago, Rabbi Lezer Omer, ain lo shmira ela sakin, that the only type of shmira that a muad has is that it's not even enough by a shmira ma'ula. The only way to absolve yourself of liability for watching a shor muad is going to be to kill it, as if you shecht it, because otherwise you're always going to be chayiv for whatever damage the shor happens to do. So who is this Tana who says that by a muad it is enough to do a shmira p'chusa? It's Rabbi Yehuda. That's why he says if you do the shmira p'chusa and nevertheless the animal breaches it and goes out, you're going to be patur because you did everything that you should have done. Says the Gemara, no afilu teimer Rav Meir. Even by Rav Meir, who ordinarily says that by a muad you need a shmira meula, just like you do by a short tam, because remember, by a short tam, counterintuitively, it requires a higher level of shmira than a muad. But even Rav Meir, who says that by a shor muad you require shmira meula, he'll agree over here a shmira pchusa is enough. Shani shein v'regel, da Torah miyata b'shmirasan. Shein and regel is different, because the Torah was mamayet in their shmira. Damar Rav Elazar, Ramila b'masnisa tana. Arba dvarim haTorah miyata b'shmirasa. And there are four things that the Torah was mamayet in their shmira. Ve'eluhein, and these are they. Bar ve'esh shein v'regel. So how do we know all this stuff? So bar dechsev chiyiftach ishbar o chiyichre ishbar v'lo yichasenu. If a person, the Torah imposes liability on somebody, if the person digs a pit or opens a pit and doesn't cover it, hakiseyu potter. However, if you cover it, it's going to be potter. Why is this called a shmira p'chusa? Because covering a pit is obviously less of a permanent fix than filling in the pit with earth. Filling in the pit with earth is the best way to get rid of the pit. But we say that you're potter even if you just cover it with a movable cover. That the person who's carrying the flame has to pay adi avid ke'ein mavir, until you conduct yourself in the manner of a mavir, in the manner of a person who's setting fire to everything. In other words, that you're only chayev if you act with pshia. However, if you act without pshia, then you are not going to be chayev. Shein dechsev uvier besada acher ad avid kein ubier, until you act with negligence. And regel dechsev v'shilach, it says v'shilach adi avid kein v'shilach, until you conduct yourself in the manner of a posheya. V'tanya, and we learn in the Braisa, v'shilach zeh regel, v'shilach is a reference to regel, v'cheinu omer, mishalche regel hashar v'achamor. And similarly, we say mishalche regel. There we see a comparison between the word regel and the word v'shilach. That's how we know v'shilach is a reference to the damage caused by regel. Ubier zeashain, when it says ubier, that's a reference to shain. That's a reference to going around and eating stuff and causing damage by that. V'cheinu omer, and similarly, it says kasher yivar hagolol ad tumo, that the tooth consumes until the end. So over here we have a comparison between the word bier and the word golol, which means tooth. So when we say when we see the word bier in the pasuk, that's the reference to the nezek of shein. So taima David kein v'shilach ubier. Hello, Avid Lo. So the reason that you'd be chayiv is because you're doing ke'ein v'shilach or ke'ein bier. In other words, you're conducting yourself with a certain level of negligence in watching. But if you're not going to conduct yourself, if you're not conducting yourself with a degree of negligence in watching, then you're going to be putter for damage, even if you only did a shmira p'chusa. So Amar Rabba, so says Rabba Masisa Nami Deka. So our Mishnah is also a raya diktani because it says sown. So, because it talks over here about sown. Now, michtei b'shar kaskinan v'asi nisni shar. So, maishna d'ktani tzon. So, says the Gemara, we had previously been talking all about the halachos of shar. So, why over here does the Mishnah consciously change? And why over here does the Mishnah consciously change the animal that we're talking about? Why don't we continue talking about shar? Why are we now talking about sown? So, lami shum da Torah miyata b'shmirasan. Is it not because the Torah is mamayit in the shmira of tzon, and that's why we're talking about tzon over here? So it says, la mishum de kan keren lo ksivba, shein v'regel udechsivba. No, it's because keren is not written by tzon, but shein v'regel is written by tzon. The kamash malan, the shein v'regel de muadin hu shmamina, and we see that shein v'regel are considered to be, that he's considered to be a muad for shein and regel. However, we learn that even though he's considered to be a muad from shein and regel, we talk in the Mishnah about v'nal b'fanel karoi, and we talk about only guarding karoi, that it's only able to withstand the ruach mitsuya. And so we see that the Tana of this Mishnah holds that by a muad it's good enough only for a shmira p'chusa, because shein and regel agabe tzon is considered to be a muad because it's sown's always muad to go eat things or to go trample things. Yet we see in the Mishnah that you're potter, you're off the hook if you watched it with a shmira p'chusa. So from there it's a raya that also by an animal that has the status of a tam and a muad, when it's a muad, it's enough to watch it with a shmira p'chusa. So we'll pick up, or Rabbi Leibowitz, who's back tomorrow, we'll pick up here from the two dots, first wide line, five lines up from the bottom of the page.